Seems like a waste of time, Seaborg said. If the Realborn don't trust us, why should we protect them? It's what we were born to do, Brahe said. I didn't ask to be born, Seaborg said. And you're thinking like a Realborn, Brahe said. We are human too. When we fight for humans, we fight for ourselves. No one asks to be born, but we are born and we are human. We fight for ourselves as much as for any other human. If we don't defend humanity, we'll be just as dead as the rest of them. This universe is implacable. Seaborg lapsed into silence, but his irritation broadcast itself. Is this all we do? Jared asked. What do you mean? Brahe said. We are born for this purpose, Jared said. But can we do something else, too? What do you suggest? Brahe asked. I don't know, Jared said. But I'm only a day old. I don't know much. This got pings of amusement and a smile from Brahe. We are born to this, but we're not slaves, Brahe said. We serve a term of service, 10 years. After that, we can choose to retire, become like the Realborn and colonize. There's even a colony set aside for us. Some of us go there. Some of us choose to blend in with the Realborn and the other colonies, but most of us stay with the Special Forces. I did. Why? Jared asked. It's what I was born for, Brahe repeated. And I'm good at it. You're all good at it. Or will be soon enough. Let's get started.
We do a lot of things faster than Realborn, Sarah Pauling said, dipping into her soup. But I'm guessing that eating isn't one of them. If you ate too fast, you'd choke. That'd be funny, but it would also be bad. Jared sat across from her at one of the two mess tables assigned to the 8th training squad. Alan Milliken, curious about the differences between Realborn and Special Forces training, discovered that Realborn trained in platoons, not squads, and that Special Forces training squads were not the same size as squads in the CDF. Everything that Milliken learned on the subject was sent to the other members of the 8th and added to their store of information. Thus, another benefit of integration made itself known. Only one member of the 8th had to learn something in order for all the other members to know it. Jared slurped at his own soup. I think we eat faster than Realborn, he said. Why is that? Pauling said. Jared took a big spoonful of soup.
Because if they talk and eat soup at the same time, this happens, he said, drooling soup out of his mouth as he spoke.
Pauling put her hand to her mouth to stifle a laugh.
Uh-oh, she said, after a second.
What? Jared said. Pauling glanced left, then right. Jared looked around and saw the entire mess hall looking at him. Jared belatedly realized that everyone could, in fact, hear him speak when he used his mouth. Nobody else in the mess hall had spoken with their mouth during the entire meal. Jared suddenly realized that the last time he had heard anyone else speak was when Lieutenant Cloud offered his farewells. Speaking out loud was weird.
Sorry, he said on a general band. Everyone returned to their food.
You're making a fool of yourself, Stephen Seaborg, down the table, said to Jared.
It was just a joke, Jared said.
It was just a joke, Seaborg said, mockingly. Idiot.
You're not very nice, Jared said.
You're not very nice, Seaborg said.
Jared may be an idiot, but at least he can think up his own words, Pauling said.
Hey, shut up, Pauling, Seaborg said. No one asked you to butt in.
Jared began to respond when an image popped up in his visual field. Squat, misshapen humans were arguing about something in high-pitched voices. One of them began to mock the other by repeating his words, like Seaborg had been doing to Jared.
Who are these people? Seaborg asked.
Pauling, too, looked mystified. Gabriel Brahe's voice popped into their heads.
They're children, he said. Immature humans. And they're having an argument. I'll have you note they are arguing just like you were.
He started it,
Seaborg said, looking for Brahe in the mess hall. He was at a far table, eating with other officers. he didn't turn to look at the trio.
One of the reasons the Realborn don't trust us is because they're convinced we're children,
Brahe said.
Emotionally stunted children in adult-sized bodies. And the thing about that is, they're right. We have to learn to control ourselves like adults do, just like all humans do. And we have far less time to learn how to do it.
But, Seaborg began.
Quiet,
Brahe said.
Seaborg, after our afternoon drill, you have an assignment. From your brain pal, you can access Phoenix's data net. You get to research etiquette and interpersonal conflict resolution. Find out as much as you can and share it with the rest of the Eighth by the end of the evening. Do you understand me?
Yes,
Seaborg said. He glanced over at Jared accusingly and then lapsed silently into his food.
Dirac, you get an assignment too. Read Frankenstein. See where it takes you.
Yes, sir,
Jared said.
And don't drool any more soup, Brahe said. You look like an ass.
Brahe dropped his connection. Jared looked over to Pauling.
How come you didn't get in trouble?
He asked her. Pauling dipped the spoon into her soup.
My food stays where it's supposed to, she said, and swallowed. And I don't act like a child.
And then she stuck out her tongue. The afternoon drill introduced the Eighth to their weapon, the MP-35A MP assault rifle. The rifle was bonded to its owner by use of BrainPal authentication. From that point forward, only its owner or another human with a BrainPal could fire the rifle. This cut down on the chance of a CDF soldier having his own weapon used against him. The MP-35A was additionally modified for Special Forces soldiers to take advantage of their integration abilities. Among other things, the MP-35A could be fired remotely. Special Forces had used this ability to fatally surprise any number of curious aliens over the years. The MP-35A was more than a simple rifle. It could, at the discretion of the soldier using it, fire rifled bullets, shot, grenades, or small guided missiles. It also featured flamethrower and particle beam settings. Any of this panoply of ammunition was constructed on the fly by the MP-35A out of a heavy metallic block of nanobots. Jared wondered idly how the rifle managed the trick. His brain pal obligingly unpacked the physics behind the weapon, leading to a massive and terribly inconvenient unpacking of general physical principles while the Eighth was on the shooting range. Naturally, all of this unpacked information was forwarded onto the rest of the squad, all of whom looked over at Jared with varying levels of irritation.
Sorry,
Jared said. By the end of the long afternoon, Jared had mastered the MP-35A and its myriad of options. Jared and another recruit named Joshua Letterman focused on the options the MP allowed for its rifled bullets, experimenting with different designs of the bullets, and assessing the advantages and disadvantages of each, duly noting each to the other members of the squad. When they were ready to move on to the other ammunition options available to them, Jared and Letterman took ample advantage of the information about those weapons, fed in by other members of the Eighth, to master those options as well. Jared had to admit that whatever personal problems he might have with Steven Seaborg, if he ever needed someone to wield a flamethrower for him, Seaborg was going to be his first choice. Jared told him so as they hiked back to the barracks. Seaborg ignored him and pointedly started a private conversation with Andrea Gelman. After dinner, Jared staked out a spot on the steps of the barracks. After a brief tutorial from his brain pal, and taking care to cache his explorations so as not to repeat his embarrassing data spill from earlier in the day, he signed on the Phoenix's public data net and secured a copy of Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley's Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus, revised 3rd edition, 1831. 8 minutes later, he finished it, and was in something of a state of shock, intuiting, correctly, why Brahe had him read it. He and all the members of the Eighth, all of the Special Forces soldiers, were the spiritual descendants of the pathetic creature Victor Frankenstein had assembled from the bodies of the dead and then jolted into life. Jared saw how Frankenstein felt pride in creating life, but how he feared and rejected the creature once that life had been given, how the creature lashed out, killing the doctor's family and friends, and how creator and created were finally consumed in a pyre, their fates interlocked. The allusions between the monster and the special forces were all too obvious. And yet, as Jared considered whether it was the fate of the special forces to be as misunderstood and reviled by the Realborn as the monster was by his creator, he thought back on his brief encounter with Lieutenant Cloud. Cloud certainly didn't seem terrified or repulsed by Jared. He had offered his hand to him, a gesture that Victor Frankenstein pointedly refused from the monster he created. Jared also considered the fact that while Victor Frankenstein was the creator of the monster, his creator, Mary Shelley, implicitly offered pity and empathy to the monster. The real human in this story was a rather more complex person than the fictional one, and more inclined toward the creature than its fictional creator. He thought about that for a good solid minute. Jared greedily sought out links to the text, quickly alighting on the famous 1931 motion picture version of the story, and devouring it at 10 times speed, only to find himself greatly disappointed. The eloquence of Shelley's monster was replaced by a sad, shambling grunter. Jared quickly sampled other filmed versions, but was continually disappointed. The monster he identified with was almost nowhere to be seen in any of these, even in the versions that paid lip service to the original text. Frankenstein's monster was a joke. Jared gave up on filmed versions before he reached the end of the 21st century. Jared tried another tack and sought out stories of other created beings, and was soon acquainted with Friday, R. Daniil Oliva, Data, Hal, Der Machinen Mensch, Astro Boy, the various Terminators, Chana Fortuna, Joe the Robot Bastard, and all manner of other droids, robots, computers, replicants, clones, and genetically engineered whatsits that were as much the spiritual descendants of Frankenstein's monster as he was. Curious, Jared moved backward in time from Shelley to find Pygmalion, golems, homunculi, and clockwork automatons. He read and watched the sad and often dangerous humorlessness of many of these creatures, and how it was used to make them objects of pity and comic relief. He now understood why Brahe was touchy about the whole sense of humor issue. Implicit in that touchiness was the idea that special forces were misrepresented in their depictions by the Realborn, or so Jared thought, until he went searching for literature or recorded entertainments featuring the special forces as main characters. There were none. The colonial era was rife with entertainments about the colonial defense forces and its military battles and events. The battle for Armstrong seemed a particularly revisited topic, but in none of them were the special forces even hinted at. The closest thing was a series of pulpy novels published on Rama Colony, featuring the adventures of a secret force of erotic superhuman soldiers who mostly overcame fictional alien species by having energetic sex with them until they surrendered. Jared, who at this time understood sex, largely in the reproductive sense, wondered why anyone would think this was a viable way to conquer one's enemies. He decided that he was probably missing something important about this sex thing and filed it away to ask Brahe about later. In the meantime, there was the mystery of why, from the point of view of the fiction output of the colonies, the special forces didn't exist. But that was for another night, perhaps. Jared was eager to share his current explorations with his squad mates. He uncached his findings and released them to the others. As he did, he became aware that he wasn't the only one sharing discoveries. Brahe had assigned homework to the majority of the Eighth, and these explorations came flooding into his perception. Among them, etiquette and the psychology of conflict resolution from Seaborg, whom Jared could sense rolling his eyes at almost all of the material he was passing along, major battles of the Colonial Defense Forces from Brian Michelson, animated cartoons from a recruit named Jerry Yukawa, Human Physiology from Sarah Pauling. Jared made a note to make fun of her later for giving him grief about his own assignment earlier in the day.